somebody who was pretty much at the end of a 15-year journey that has convinced me beyond a shadow of a doubt, none of this will get solved by violence. It's got to, if you really want to solve the problems in the Mideast, you have to do it by nonviolence. I'm looking and I am seeing people that are, they're waking up. Yeah, it's late. It's slow. I admit it. I agree with that. But they're waking up. They're sitting there saying, wait a minute. This isn't right. And when I look and I see, when I see poll results that show that people acknowledge that global warming is real and people feel personally empowered to do stuff about it. Remember what Bob Paschal said in the first hour? Well, he's one of the co-chairs from Wisconsin. That's because progressive activists are out there saying, you are power. You can make a difference. Yeah, you by yourself can go out there. Every little thing you do makes a difference. Every little thing you do is magic. Didn't they write a song about that? They should have if they didn't. And when I see polls that people are not buying the official line that these just really bad people, I think it's a good sign. And when I look and I see support for this horrible, horrible war in Iraq just sinking like a rock over a cliff, I think it's a good sign. You know what I think? Get ready. Hold on to your seat here. I think we're winning, ladies and gentlemen. I think truth, honesty, and the progressive American way is going to win and come out on top. And I want to be part of the victory parade. All right, gosh and golly, I'm going to leave my daughter a better world than what I came into. All right? Well, that's it for me. I'm all done. Grayson Rama, Homebodies, thank you very much for tuning in. And don't forget, coming right up after us, it's Bruce Birch, All Things Reconsidered. And tag, I'm it. So are you.
Head-On Radio News. I'm Bob Kincaid. Secretary of State Condi Rice and her British counterpart Jack Straw made a hasty trip to Iraq on Sunday. Once in Iraq, the duo pressured Iraqi government leaders to get a government up and running. The Bush administration has already made it clear that it doesn't want Ibrahim al-Jaafari to serve as Iraq's prime minister. That doesn't sit well with many Iraqis who are actually hoping to have a free nation. Scooter Libby is gunning for his prosecutor. The disgraced White House insider's lawyers are trying to get Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald dismissed along with the indictment against Libby. Libby's lawyers say in a filing made public recently that Fitzgerald has exceeded the scope of his appointment. And this is the first anniversary of the death of Pope John Paul II, and the Vatican reports that the ex-pontiff is still dead. Pope Benedict XVI, a former Nazi, addressed tens of thousands of people gathered in St. Peter's Square Sunday, telling the assembled faithful that his former boss, quote, continues to live in our minds and in our hearts, unquote. Journalist Jill Carroll is back home in the USA. Carroll arrived in Boston on Sunday, where she was reunited with her parents. Carroll was held by Iraqi kidnappers for more than 3 months. On returning to the U.S., Carroll said, quote, I finally feel alive again, unquote. That, according to the Christian Science Monitor, which employs Jill Carroll. The U.S. has lost another helicopter in Iraq. The Pentagon confirmed Sunday that a chopper that crashed outside Baghdad had likely been shot down. The Pentagon also confirmed that the two-man crew of the aircraft both died in the attack. Names have not yet been released. Elsewhere in Iraq, it was just another tense day. One group bombed another group's mosque not far from Bakuba. That town was the scene Saturday of the assassination of an Iraqi holy man on his way home from a funeral. In addition, an unknown group also bombed three music stores in Bakuba. The U.S. military says the mosque bombing didn't happen. It's like something out of an old Western. The aisles are cleared in the U.S. Senate for a showdown Monday in the so-called immigration debate. Senate Republicans are split between those who want cheap labor and those who are motivated by racism. Once the Senate reaches a decision, its bill still must be reconciled with the House version. Last year, House Republicans passed a bill that would turn 12 million people in this country into criminals. An AP Ipsos poll shows that more than half of all Americans surveyed support letting immigrants stay without being tormented. This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
In the beginning, there was dirt, water, and air. And it was good. Once, Planet Check.
With gas prices skyrocketing at the pump, there is a cheap, renewable alternative fuel.
Rudolph Diesel actually designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago.
A diesel engine that runs on used vegetable oil?
We get the used vegetable oil from fast food restaurants.
It's called biodiesel. Joshua Tickle, author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, explains.
Biodiesel is a clean-burning diesel fuel that's actually made from vegetable oil. It's usable in any diesel engine. You don't have to modify the engine. You just pour biodiesel right into it.
Pour some veggie fuel into that tank.
The environmental benefits of biodiesel are that it's cleaner, it's healthy for humans, plants, and animals.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
Ohio Congresswoman Jean Schmidt's in trouble again. The woman who called decorated veteran Congressman John Murtha a coward has been caught lying about her credentials. Schmidt claims on her campaign website to have 2 degrees from the University of Cincinnati. Oops. The university says she only has 1. 7 people before him said, no thanks, but David Paulson said, yes. After trying to get 7 other people to take the job, Paulson will accept the post of director of the Federal Emergency Management Agency offered by George Bush. Bush will nominate Paulson for the post in the coming week. Paulson has been acting director since Michael Brown stepped down from the post after Hurricane Katrina. Hurricane season starts on June 1st. Forecasters are saying this year could be worse than 2005. After testing a ballistic multiple warhead missile only days ago, Iran announced Sunday it had tested a new underwater missile. Tehran said Sunday that it had tested an underwater missile that can evade sonar and outpace any warship. The missile is a subkiller and can travel as much as 100 meters per second. Iran is trying to make it as unpalatable as possible for the United States to attack under Bush's preemptive war doctrine. Now, we've seen stories where statues of the Virgin Mary bleed. We've seen stories where the statues weep. We've seen stories where the Virgin Mary shows up on everything from honey buns to grease stains to knot holes. Not this time. No, this time the Blessed Virgin is getting high. 2 men were indicted in New York for smuggling cocaine into the U.S. inside 3-foot-high statues of Mary. Our Lady of Perpetual Motion had 242 pounds of sacred Bolivian marching powder in her. This is News on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's bright. It's beautiful. It's great. It's small. It's all things. It's Sunday night. Here's your host, Bruce Birch.
Welcome back to another fun-filled edition of All Things with Bruce Birch. I'm glad to have you back with me again this week. What a week it's been. I say that every week, but every week is always, it's got its good and its bad stuff, and it's got all kinds of things. That's why we have a show called All Things. But glad to have you on board with me this evening. We are accepting
your phone calls fairly unscreened. We ask your name and your location, maybe even the topic, but we're not going to keep you from getting on the air. Love to hear from you. If you want to call into the program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-443-2366. I would also encourage you, if you're so inclined, to send email as opposed to your picking up the telephone and putting your own voice into our conversation radio. You can send me an email by doing so by sending one to allthings at allthingsreconsidered.org. Those are the two ways you can get in touch with me. Actually, that's not the only two ways, because I'm also in the chat room. We do have a chat room, and if you haven't been to the chat room yet, I do strongly encourage you to do so, to go check that out. There's a bunch of progressives in there right now. I'm trying to let me look and see exactly how many there are. Looks like to me there's around 15 to 20 people in the chat room, and they are wound up for all things. And, you know, a bunch of progressives in there talking about progressive things and talking about other stuff, too, not just necessarily progressive stuff. You never know what you're going to hear when you go into the chat. So do check it out by going to headonradionetwork.com. Headonradionetwork.com, and you can check that out. We are streaming world freaking wide under the auspices of the White Rose Society. Thank you, Ben Birch. He also archives our program at whiterosesociety.org. You can go down and click on All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch, and that'll get you to all the archives of our program. We also have a little bit more of a detailed listing of the archives at our website, but he hosts them. So if you feel so inclined to toss Mr. Ben Birch a dime or two, please do that, because he provides a valuable service. He is doing a fundraising drive right now. And also, we are being streamed world freaking wide in WMA, Windows Media Format, WMA format, at the last radio station. And if you go to the chat room, Keith Lake will get you the link to that server. So if you want to go check that out, then please do that if that's the way you need to get the program. Now, wow, a lot of those housekeeping announcements. What a week it has been, ladies and gentlemen. I got an email through the week. You know, last week on this radio program, we talked about impeachment. We had Matt Rothschild, who is the editor of the Progressive Magazine, on, and he was talking about, or he laid out the case for impeachment. And a wonderful interview with this gentleman. But we did get a few emails about this particular interview, and one of them in particular I wanted to share with you. And the reason why I wanted to share it with you is because it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, and I'm just going to go ahead and read it word for word. And this is from Richard in North Carolina. And Richard says, "Bruce, I've been listening to Bob's show," and he's referring to Bob Kincaid, who has a radio program 7 to 10 every weekday night on this very same radio stream that you're on. It's called Head On with Bob Kincaid. Wonderful radio program. He's right out of West Virginia. He says, "I've been listening to Bob's show for a couple of weeks, and I just started listening to yours, too. Thanks for jumping into the fray." Well, thank you, Richard, for thanking me. He says, "I just listened to your interview with Matt Rothschild, and one comment by him really grated on me. Since you let the comment pass without asking him to explain it, I'll ask you the question I hoped you would ask him. Like too many establishment lefties, he obviously disavows any suspicion or suggestion of behind-the-scenes machinations on the part of the government. During his interview, he declared that he is not one of those lefties who think the Republicans or right-wingers have been marching the nation towards fascism. What are they marching the nation toward, then? Are we to take Leo Strauss, Russell Kirk, Samuel Huntington, and other conservative intellectual heavyweights with a grain of salt when they consistently and eloquently argue against democracy and in favor of maintaining power in the hands of few? What does he think was the point of the consolidation of media, establishment of think tanks, manipulation of elections, promulgation of right-wing talk radio, and other expressions of this drive for more influence and power than we've seen over the past 30 years? based on the assumptions in his statement, there is either no goal, it is merely a coincidence that these things have taken place contemporaneously with the rise of the right wing, or these actions were all designed to make America more democratic, and the result is that America has chosen to be ruled by a corrupt corporate aristocracy. He continues, I think it's cowardly for liberals like Rothschild to accuse the government of widespread atrocities against the rest of the world when they're discussing pet issues like East Timor, Palestine, or Iraq, and then deny any possibility of the same government committing similar acts of repression and violence against domestic targets for fear of being labeled a conspiracy theorist. There's an implication in there that we have open access to the details of all the covert ops being conducted overseas, or that someone comes forward to blow the whistle every time some government agency violates the law, and therefore any incident for which there isn't a press release or a Rose Garden press conference simply never happened, which is a ridiculous idea on its face. I suppose he's doing what he thinks he needs to do to maintain credibility among the soy and latte liberal establishment, but I wish you would have called him on it. I'll keep listening. Keep on keeping on. Peace and freedom, Richard in North Carolina. That's a pretty heavy-duty email. And, Richard, thank you for sending it. I read this midweek and, thought about replying and letting it go. But then I decided that in order to have real conversation radio here at All Things with Bruce Birch, that it was best to bring this to the fray. And I'm going to tell you why I think that. We on the left are a little bit different than those on the right. We tend to not be the type of folks to march in lockstep toward communism, toward fascism, toward anything. I mean, as Will Rogers once said, I'm not a member of an organized political party, I'm a Democrat. However, having said that, there are those on the right. Grover Norquist is one that comes to mind. There are a few others that are escaping my mind. I mean, you mentioned, or this writer mentioned Leo Strauss, Russell Kirk, Samuel Huntington, who definitely have helped organize the right wing and to create a new paradigm for them. Because, see, the right wing of this nation didn't really have a program that was a winning program until it became married to the evangelical Christian base. You know, the people who just, a lot of them who just chose not to vote because of the fact that, the government was too secular. They've brought a lot of those folks out of the woodwork to vote. They've also, in my view, here you want to talk about a conspiracy theory. I believe very strongly that the last election was very flawed, and there's enough evidence in states such as New Mexico, Nebraska, Ohio, Florida, that gathered all together swayed the election away from the left and gave it to the right. So, I you're absolutely right. I let it go by, and it's quite possible that I was in the middle of doing something at the moment when he was talking. and for that, I apologize. But I will do this. Richard, what I will do, if you're listening, I will forward this along to Mr. Rothschild, and let's let him answer. Maybe he can send an email back, and we can keep this conversation going. One of the things that I do appreciate about this radio program is that, we will go ahead and tackle some of the things that we need to tackle. And we need and we do attempt anyway to look at some of the deeper questions that you're not going to check out, you're not going to get it during the weekend. A lot of the other larger radio programs. Well, just to keep that in mind, also as we go through the program tonight, because one of the questions that I have about censure and about impeachment is why Russ Feingold was left hung out to dry the other day. We talked about a little bit on Fourth Estate Radio last night. But we haven't yet talked about it here on All Things. And I'll do some of that tonight, as well as a number of other stories, including an expose by the LA Times on the wounded of the war. So stick around for a minute or two, or for an hour or two. My name's Bruce Birch. This is All Things. We'll be right back.
When the lights be closing, your tired little eyes, I'll soon be with you, my dove, and give you that potato-headed surprise.
Hi, this is Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man's thinking man, and I'm sick and tired of watching corporate thugs steal our money, steal our freedoms, and use propaganda to turn us against each other. We live in a world that's turned against working people in every country, and I say enough is enough. It's time to take back the airwaves, time for us to stand up to corporate power and corporate greed, time to put aside all our differences and face our common enemies, and time to take back control of our government. So if you feel like I do, then I want you to join me for the premiere of the Cup of Joe radio show Saturday, April 8th, 2006, from 8 to 10 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. It's the wave of the future, the voice of the resistance, the truth that will set you free. So join me via screaming audio Saturday, April 8th, from 8 to 10 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
Head On. He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head On with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin. No falafel, no Oxycontin, just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day, Head On. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night, HeadOnRadio.com.
Click On Air every weeknight from 7.06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head On.
Hello?
Hi, Bill? This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving.
Hmm.
And I don't quite know how to say this, but...
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Thank you for joining me again. This is Bruce Birch. You're back with All Things with Bruce Birch. And, you know, before I went off to the break, I mentioned a little bit about the whole thing with Feingold and what's going on. And, you know, I read an article today. Well, first of all, if you don't know what's going on with Feingold, let me do a quick recap, just a real brief one. Most of you already know what's happening. But Russ Feingold came out proposed censure last week. We talked about it a little bit on this radio program with Matt Rothschild also. But the hearing on censure was actually Friday. And during this hearing, Mr. Feingold had John Dean. He had Bruce Fine. Had a couple other, two or three other guys there. And they were testifying about the fact that George Bush has willingly, knowingly, blah, 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 illegally wiretapped domestic telephone calls. Now, the line that the administration is throwing out there, the propaganda, the smokescreen, the false story, if you will, is that these calls are, that they're recording, are strictly Al-Qaeda. These are known terrorists. These are not normal, everyday, law-abiding citizens. These are people who are bad people. This is the same government, I might want to remind you, that has been targeting opposition groups, groups on the left, for surveillance, and has been saying all along, you know, that they haven't been until the covers have been pulled and the information gets released. So the hearing was Friday. The Judiciary Senate Committee on the Judiciary, Arlen Specter, who I found out yesterday, cut his teeth trying to defend Richard Nixon. So it's kind of interesting that John Dean was testifying there. I'm sure that, you know, there was actually at one point during the hearings where Specter actually got a dig in at John Dean, and I guess that's, you know, one of those payback things. But so they had these hearings Friday, and only one senator besides Feingold, Herb Cole was there, but he left, and then Patrick Leahy was there, and he asked a few questions, and then he left. So Senator Feingold was pretty much left out there on his own. Pretty much left out there on his own. Up against the might and the resourcefulness of the Bushites. Now, several points during this hearing, a number of the Republicans who were fighting, you know, the truth, you know, keep trying to keep the truth from coming out, were essentially evoking memories of Watergate, throwing up all kinds of smoke screens. Last night I referred to the smoke screens as potatoes on the wall, referring to the fact that they were trying to throw anything up there that would, to see what would stick before falling down. And the reality is that none of it, understanding and the news stories that I read, first of all, there wasn't much of a media, you know, this wasn't much of a media event. It should have been, but it really wasn't. I mean, some of the political realms have covered it, but it's not something that's splashed everywhere. But having said that, the coverage that has been out there, a lot of it focused on the fact that Dean was there. So, regardless of what you think about that, the move. I read an article today that intimated that the move towards censure is gathering steam on the left. Now, Feingold's poll numbers have been rising steadily since he came out with. Came out with the idea of censoring the president. The progressive part of the party, which at this point is almost all of it, is strongly, everyone that I've talked to who is in the Democratic Party, is strongly, well, they're strongly in favor of impeachment, and censure is a step back from impeachment, so you can imagine they're in favor of that. So it's, you know, I'm going to make a prediction, and then we're going to get off into the rest of the program after a quick break. But the prediction that I'm going to make is that as this week goes on, now we'll see next Sunday if I'm right. I could be wrong. That's fine. I've been wrong before. But the prediction that I'm going to make is that Feingold is going to pick up support for censure this week. And it's going to keep it in the news. And he's going to pick up probably by next weekend, maybe 15 senators are going to come on board. Let's say 15. We're going to take a quick break. My name is Bruce Birch. If you want to get in on the program, call 1-877-443-2366 or send me an email, allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org. We'll be right back.
Tell me what's the reason. You know she went to see the doctor. Then she read a magazine. Forget the book, I told her then go on.
McGruff, the crime dog here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride.
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write...
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll be helping me take a fight out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Bush's war has taken a terrible toll on women in Iraq. I was speaking with an incredibly brave Iraqi woman the other day. Her name's Huzan Mahmoud, and she's a leader of the Organization for Women's Freedom in Iraq. She told me that Iraq is a hell for women right now. Islamist repression is on the rise, with women required to wear the veil. Those who don't can get beaten up, raped, and even beheaded. She warns of a coming dark ages of gender enslavement. And as much as she blames Bush for his war of aggression that has led to this sorry state, she doesn't spare the Islamist forces who oppose Bush. This is a heads up to my friends and colleagues on the left. Even as we oppose Bush's war in Iraq, we must resist the temptation to romanticize the Iraqi insurgents or the Shiite firebrand Muqtada al-Sadr. Huzan Mahmoud calls him a thug and a gangster. His forces have torn the shirts off unveiled women, then photographed them and threatened to send the photos to their parents. Al-Sadr's forces have also thrown acid in the faces of unveiled women. Huzan Mahmoud is a secularist. She looks to feminists, trade unionists, and other secular forces to rescue Iraq. As she puts it, neither the U.S. nor the Islamists can liberate Iraq. It's an important message for us all to hear. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Okay, you're back on All Things with Bruce Birch, and it's about 30 minutes. We're right at the very bottom of the 10 o'clock hour, right? Or should I say we're crossing the hump and we're racing down the other side. And before I went to the break, I predicted, put a prediction out there, 15 members will be in support of Feingold by this program next week. If I'm wrong, I challenge you to call me up and tell me how wrong I am. If I'm right... Let's see, if I'm right, can I take the next Sunday off? No, I can't. That's fine. Okay, well, let's get on to the next story. We talked about censure there, but I really do. If you want to get up on the radio program and talk about any of these issues, you're more than welcome to do so. You can call 1-877-443-2366, or if you like letters, 1-877, the number 4, and then head on. We'll get you into the studios of the Head On Radio Network and onto the air with All Things. Read an interesting paper this week by well-known talk radio host Tom Hartman. And in this opinion piece that he wrote, he basically, and this is about, you know, this is a, it's called Today's Immigration Battle, Corporatists versus Racists, and Labor is Left Behind. And in this paper, Mr. Hartman does his best to equate, I shouldn't say equate, Mr. Hartman makes the argument that the that illegal immigration is what, you know, it, of course, is what is destroying the middle class in the country, and or part of what's it's destroying the middle class. And, you know, I read this paper during the last week, and actually I got kind of upset after I read it, and primarily I got upset after I read it because I guess it's one of those things. Now, if you want to read this paper, you can go to commondreams.org and then click on Tom Hartman's name. He's on the page there somewhere. It's called Today's Immigration Battle, Corporatists versus Racists, and the Labor is Left Behind. And I just wanted to talk about the whole immigration situation for a minute, because I feel like there's like four or five sides to this. There is the corporatist side, which is in favor of guest worker, I guess amnesty would be the word, guest worker permits, whatever. There is the xenophobic side that says that they're, you know, the Michael Savage side, Michael Wiener, whichever, who contend that this is the undocumented workers in America. This is an invasion to our nation. So there's another side, the xenophobic side. And then on the left, we have those who would be totally in favor of, you know, granting complete amnesty to undocumented aliens and saying, yeah, sure, you're here, whatever, it's fine. And then there are those on the left who are angry that the unions aren't upset about it and think that what needs to happen is that we just need to have all these folks, they just need to leave, and they need to go back to their own country, and they need to rebuild their country in the vision of what they think their country should be like. And I think I'm going to lay down a supposition that that's where Mr. Hartman falls. I really have a tough time with that. And I guess there's the, you know, I certainly hope that, you know, if someone disagrees with me, they'll call me or send me an email or something and let me know what they're thinking. But here's my feeling about this. We have a basic human rights issue going on here. And this basic human rights issue is based on a living wage, okay? And it's much larger than just the United States. It's much larger than just the corporatists versus the racists. It's much larger than just the unions. And that is that this country has settled for less. It's settled for less money. It's been settling for less benefits. And see, the corporatists, and, you know, now, and, okay, before I finish that thought, you know, we have settled for less when we do arrangements, trade agreements. You know, if you have watched the little short film at the Sundance Radio or Sundance Film Festival website, there's a little short film that's about 20 minutes long. It's called Ha 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 America. The trade disparity between China and America is about $170 billion. Okay, that is where we've settled for less. And at some point, we're going to hit a point of no return with this. And you know, I guess what really gets under my skin is that we have this little situation where we have the illegal immigrants coming out and raising all kinds of cane about the fact that they're about to be made felons. 11 million people, or better, were about to be made felons under James Sensenbrenner's bill. And the people who could help them would be made felons. of course, I wonder in that. I wonder, you know, I need to do some research on this, but I wonder if in that bill the people who employed them were going to be made felons too. I seriously doubt that. But we have, you know, and it's been a movement afoot since Reagan's time, probably since Nixon's time, to break the unions. Now, are they breaking the unions by using illegal undocumented workers, illegal aliens? That's part of it. But the other part of it, too, is that they're, you know, to me it's a red herring. I mean, we have watched over the last 30 years the right wing use the power of the corporate gavel to say, if you don't, you know, we can't make any money here. We can't compete with the Chinese. We can't compete with the North Koreans. We can't compete with whoever it is. You fill in the blank. We can't compete in with them. So what we have to do is we have to, you know, allow these companies, we have to create these trade agreements and allow these companies to do business in Mexico and have there be no tariffs and have it be completely free trade. And, you know, and free trade on its best day is exploitative. On its worst day, it's genocidal. If that argument that they tried to sell us with NAFTA 15 years ago were so true, then why do we have millions of Mexicans working in the United States, you know, risking their lives across the border to work here for better wage? Why? Because those jobs that went to Mexico stayed for about 2 years and then they went to China, where they've been ever since. So that free trade agreement was nothing more than just another way for the corporate mind, for the corporate scene, to make some more money. That's all it was about. Had nothing to do with anything else. They went down there, they built all these wonderful factories, and then, you know what? It wasn't maybe 5 years later, literally, they were standing empty. They were closed down. So, the unions in this nation, interestingly enough, have been falling down on the side of the undocumented workers. Why? Because I think the unions are actually seeing the reality of this. And the reality of this is that there is a huge untapped working class force out there that's actually even more politically engaged than most citizens. And, you know, and they're saying to these folks, you know, we'd be willing to work with you. We want to work with you. We want to try to create better working conditions and to try to create an equitable way of dealing with the government and dealing with, you know, your working hours, et cetera. So I don't think that's a bad thing. And I think the other thing that we're seeing is that we're seeing a revolution in American society through this situation. We are seeing a revolution in American society. Now, I live in North Carolina where there was an incredible influx of Hispanics. So much so that we have had whole towns that have the nationality of the town has changed, you know, to Latin American because of the influx. And, you know, if these folks are taking our jobs, I'd like to know where they're taking them. Because, you know, what we're seeing in North Carolina is that the corporatists have been sending the jobs to Central America while the Central Americans have been coming here. You know, the construction trades, there's a whole wealth of jobs out there that, you know, the president claims that Americans won't do. I don't buy that. What I think is that there's enough jobs for all of us. It's just a matter of what you want to do. But these folks need to be organized. That will bring back up the standard of living. These folks need to be organized. They need to band together and say, we're only going to work for this amount of wages. I think that this has the potential, Mr. Hartman would disagree with me, but that's okay. I think that this has the potential to reinvigorate the union movement in a huge way. But it's not going to reinvigorate the union movement in a huge way if we stick our head in the sand and look at these folks as if they were the devil incarnate. It's not going to reinvigorate the union movement if we say to those folks, you know, we don't want you here, and go back to your own country and try to create your own society. Some of these folks have been here for 5-10 years, you know, maybe longer. They've been working. They've been paying taxes into a system that they'll never get the money out of. You know, I think they deserve a chance. I could be very wrong. You could say I'm wrong, and that's fine. Your opinion is as valid as mine here on all things. But, you know, I wanted to weigh in on this immigration situation because I do believe very strongly, you know, that we are a nation of immigrants. And, you know, unless you're Native American, you're an immigrant. To deny those folks the ability to the American dream is, in my view, a little bit bigoted. But that's just me. All right. Had a few more stories I want to talk about today, but I wanted to give that some time because my feeling on that is exactly what it is. So, you know, and everyone has their opinions. I challenge you. Please do give me a call. If you do have an opinion you would like to share, I'd love to hear from you. You can call into the program by dialing 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-443-2366. This is Activist Radio. We want to also wanted to bring to your attention, and I've got a break coming up, that's fine. My name is Bruce Birch. This is All Things with Bruce Birch. We'll be back in just a moment.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye, baby, by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion makes sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball. While gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady?
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer.
And here are some of the first words she hears. Hertenue oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Listen to me, Shirley Jones. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the Internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
All right, you're back on with Bruce Birch, and this is All Things. And, you know, right before I went to the break, I was talking about the undocumented worker here in the U.S. and, you know, gave out the phone number, and wouldn't you know it, we got a caller on the line. And my friend Spike is on with us. Spike from Easton, PA, how are you doing?
Hey, Gonzo, greetings, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great, man, but as they say, I'll get better. What's shaking? What's going on up there?
Not much. Hopefully it won't rain too much on me tomorrow afternoon. Opening day for baseball, opening day for my Phillies. I got the best seat ever at this stadium, row 4, and now it looks like it'll probably rain all day, which is just my luck, you know. Having a great seat at the ball game, and it'll probably just pour all day, and I won't see anything but rain. But, yeah, I'm a Phillies fan, 123-year-old team and only one championship, but I guess I'm used to losing at this point some way or another.
Kind of like a Browns fan, right?
Yeah, somewhat, yeah. You know.
Or a White Sox? Who is it? I was going to say Boston, yeah.
Yeah, the Cubs. There's habitual losers in this country, and I seem to be on their side all the time. But you were talking about immigration and essentially the race to the bottom, the race that the corporate entities known as the politicians in Washington have been forcing upon us to essentially drive labor wages down in this country, which is the real true reason corporatists support the floodgates being wide open. I mean, you know, eventually, you know, more and more you hear whenever any teachers who get paid peanuts for all the work they put into their job, you know, when they try to go on strike for a contract or something, it's always, oh, they should be lucky they have jobs, you know, and it's this guilt, like, you know, just do whatever we do to, you know, pay you whatever. It's ridiculous. I mean, I work with someone right now. He used to work at a cement plant. He made $11 an hour working at a cement. You know what kind of work you got to do at a cement plant? And he's $11 an hour.
That's one of those jobs where you come home and you're literally coughing dust. You know, the rest. You know, you work 8-10 hours a day, and then you're coughing dust another 10 hours.
Yeah. Or even my next door neighbor, this guy, he makes about $7.50 an hour working at a pallet place. I mean, one day he had a whole bunch of pallets fall down on him, and, you know, they don't have any benefits to help him out, and he had to miss, I think, 2 days' worth, which for him, you know, $7.50 an hour, that's devastating. You know, he couldn't afford to see a doctor or anything, so he had to just kind of lay and heal his wounds and go back to busting his hump for $7.50 an hour. I mean, that's why I really laugh when these neocon corporatists you say, oh, well, they're just doing the work the Americans don't want to do. It's not the Americans don't want to do the work. It's that very few can afford to. You know, the real thing is, you know, when I was a driving school instructor, I had plenty of students who were immigrants, and a lot of them, I'm sure, not quite legally here. And a lot of them lived in motel, you know, four roommates living in a motel room. You know, it's like, yeah, that's why they can afford to work for those low wages. I mean, you know, how many people would want to raise their family living in a motel room in this country with, you know, perhaps even a few cousins thrown in the room with you? You know, living on top of each other, no privacy. I mean, this is the impoverished squalor, so to speak, that these immigrants are having as their great opportunity. I mean, for the Mexicans and the people from India, yeah, it's great compared to the horrific living conditions those countries have. And this is just all an effect of the whole idea of this world trade, you know, this thing that the Clinton-Gore administration forced upon us for the first Bush administration. You know, they picked up where H.W. Bush left off and gave us this great idea of how, you know, apparently everyone in America can make a living working at the electronic boutique at the mall, you know, because about the only industry we have left is low-wage malls. And, you know, it's just been a hard anti-labor drive to drive the labor down in this country. I mean,
I totally agree with you.
How can you live in a, you know, you can't live in a one-bedroom apartment in any major city in this country on minimum wage. You can't live in a house with a family. I mean, we're taking a step back in time. It's kind of funny. I started reading some, so to speak, socialist stuff from the turn of the century, you know, 100 years ago. And what they were saying then to turn people off to the capitalist system, it's kind of almost like we've gone full circle. We're kind of back to where we were 100 years ago at this point. I mean, we're heading in that direction. It's the devo, the de-evolution of man.
Well, I agree with you. And I think, you know, first of all, I think that, you know, this is the opportunity for these folks to organize. I mean, this is, you know, and I know that there are regulations, I think, about immigration that you can't organize or I'm trying to think of the right terminology they were using, but I think that there's rules in effect that basically illegal, you know, criminalize organization of immigrant labor that is undocumented. But, you know, to me, it's a matter of, you know, if it's like, okay, let's blame the house for the lightning strike. That burned the house down.
Well, it's like blaming the people in New Orleans for not leaving that don't own cars.
Right, right. I mean, I don't see, you know, I hear people a lot of the time, they're fussing about how the, you know, they're illegal, they need to get out of here. Okay, well, that's fine, but let's look at the root cause. If they leave, the same situation is in effect.
Yeah.
There isn't, well, nothing's changed.
My favorite is the people with the more prejudice spin on the illegal immigration, because they also like to claim how they're taken up and, you know, used in their hospitals. Most of them are scared to death to go to hospitals because they figure they'll get caught and sent back home. For the most part, I mean, keep in mind, there's a criminal element in every community. Trust me, there's plenty of white boys in this country committing crimes, you know, heinous crimes. They always try to give the spin that they're increasing the crime rate or they're overwhelming our hospitals. Or my favorite is that they're lazy. And let me tell you something. When I worked at Tiffany & Company, they had a cleaning company that basically exclusively hired Latino immigrants. And you wanted to see some hard-working dudes, all you needed to do was look at some of those guys. There was this one guy from the Dominican Republic. He literally had another job, and there were a lot of days where for weeks upon weeks, he'd work 20-hour days between his two jobs, which gave him a total of 4 hours to rest, you know. I mean,
and that's unreal, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So that's my favorite is when people try to claim that they're here and they're being lazy. Trust me, they are working hard. You know, it's a shame they got to do it, and it's all because these are an elite few now in the world, not just in the country, who are trying to control everything. I mean, there has to be a point where you have to stop and say, you know, we need some rules again. You know, this laissez-faire capitalism didn't work before, and it's not going to work again, regardless of what libertarian tools like John Stossel or Tucker Carlson might be saying out there in the media. We need some regulations as far as employment, especially in this country. And certainly the corporations that are hiring illegals, I personally feel, they should be fined extremely heavily. And you'll see how quick they'll be willing to pay more wages to have Americans do it instead. You know, if they were shelling out the government, shelling out Howard Stern-type fines on these corporations like they are on, you know, dopey radio shows, things would be a lot different. But it's such a mild slap on the wrist. You know, I believe, what is it now, Bernie? I forget the exact number Bernie Sanders says, the percentage that owns 90% of the wealth in this country at this point, 3% or something like that.
It's a ridiculously small number. Well, we are, Spike, we are hitting the top of the hour break here, but I do appreciate you calling in.
Hey, no problem.
and we'll get you again. But I'd love to have you come back. We'll talk next week.
I'll certainly try my best.
Okay, man. This is Bruce Birch. You're listening to All Things with Bruce Birch. If you'd like to get on the program, please call 1-877-443-2366. We'll be right back.
I'm just a kid.
I'm six.
I'm nine.
I'm four and a half.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know
about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Cause mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle me.
It's pretty scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get me.
I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Head on Radio News. I'm Bob Kincaid. Journalist Jill Carroll is finally back home in the USA. Carroll arrived in Boston on Sunday, where she was reunited with her parents. She was held by Iraqi kidnappers for more than 3 months. On returning to the U.S., Carroll said, quote, "I finally feel alive again." That's according to the Christian Science Monitor's press release. The Christian Science Monitor employs Jill Carroll. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and her British counterpart Jack Straw made a hasty little trip to Iraq on Sunday. Once in Iraq, the duo pressed Iraqi government leaders to get a government up and running. The Bush administration has already made it plain that it doesn't want Ibrahim al-Jafari to serve as Iraq's prime minister. That doesn't sit so well with many Iraqis who were rather hoping to have a free nation. Scooter Libby's gunning after his prosecutor. The disgraced White House insider's lawyers are trying to get Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald dismissed, along with the indictment against Libby. In a recently released court filing, Libby's lawyers say Fitzgerald has exceeded the scope of his appointment. Pope Benedict XVI, a former Nazi, addressed tens of thousands of people gathered in St. Peter's Square Sunday, telling the assembled faithful that his former boss, Pope John Paul II, quote, "continues to live in our minds and in our hearts," unquote. This is the first anniversary of the death of Pope John Paul II, and the Vatican reports that the ex-pontiff is still dead. The U.S. has lost another helicopter in Iraq. The Pentagon confirmed Sunday that a chopper that crashed outside Baghdad had probably been shot down. The Pentagon also confirmed that the two men who were the crew of the aircraft both died in the attack. Names have not yet been released. Elsewhere in Iraq, it was just another tense and violent day. One group bombed another group's mosque not far from Bakuba. That town was the scene Saturday of the assassination of an Iraqi holy man on his way home from a funeral. In addition, an unknown group also bombed three music stores in Bakuba. The U.S. military says the mosque bombing simply did not happen. And it's like something out of an old Western. The aisles are cleared in the U.S. Senate for a showdown Monday in the so-called immigration debate. Senate Republicans are split between those who want cheap labor and those who are moved by racism. Once the Senate reaches a decision, the bill still must be reconciled with the House version. Last year, House Republicans passed a bill that turns 12 million people in this country into criminals. An AP Ipsos poll shows that more than two-thirds of those surveyed understand that building a wall along the Mexican border just won't work. This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
No, thank you. Thanks, but no thanks. I've got to wash my hair for the next 4 years. Those are some of the excuses George Bush got in attempting to find someone to fill the job of director of FEMA. He asked seven separate people to take the job, but finally, David Paulson has said yes. He'll take over the Federal Emergency Management Agency pending Senate confirmation. The announcement will come this week. He's been acting director since Michael Brown stepped down from the post after Hurricane Katrina. Hurricane season starts June 1st. Forecasters are saying this year could be worse than 2005. Ohio Congresswoman Jean Schmidt's in trouble again. The woman who called decorated veteran Congressman John Murtha a coward has been caught lying about her credentials. Schmidt claims on her campaign website to have 2 degrees from the University of Cincinnati. The university says she only has one. After testing a ballistic multiple warhead missile only days ago, Iran announced Sunday it had tested a new underwater missile. Tehran said Sunday that it had tested a missile that can evade sonar and outpace any warship. The missile is a sub-killer and can travel as much as 100 meters per second. Iran is trying to make it as unpalatable as possible for the United States to attack under Bush's preemptive war doctrine. And if you're headed for the hospital, you might tell folks to keep their prayers to themselves. A new study shows that if you're having surgery and you know people are praying for you, you're less likely to survive. 601 people in the study knew they were being prayed for before their operations. 59% of them had complications after surgery. People who weren't prayed for had fewer complications. For the Head-On Radio Network, I'm Bob Kincaid.
All right, you're back on All Things with Bruce Birch. We were talking prior to the break with Spike of Easton, PA, and we were talking a little bit about immigration over the last half hour or so, and the phone lines have lit up, so glad to have you aboard. Let's go over to Jack on line one. Jack, how are you doing tonight?
Hello?
Hello, Jack, are you with me?
Yeah, I am. I've got a bad connection here, so I'll try to make it as brief as I can.
Sure, sure. Glad to have you on All Things, man. What's on your mind?
This immigration issue is a very complex type of issue. And it seems to be trying to be railroaded and sidetracked by all kinds of other issues. And it seems to me that what we ought to be looking at, identifying what it is and the impact of it in terms of globalization, as well as what the foreign policy of not only the United States, but those foreign policies, which you might call foreign policies, of the IMF and the World Bank in third world countries, that are forcing such poverty upon third world people that they have to be moving from where they probably don't want to move from in order to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to, there was an interesting article in my hometown paper in Yakima, Washington, which I believe the population there is almost one-third Hispanic now. And they, what they are doing is, because the Hispanics have been organizing there for a long time, they're now bringing people in from Laos to work the farms and stuff because they will work cheaper.
Huh.
And how do you analyze what is going on there, other than in terms of the fact that the main objective of the importation of people, legal or otherwise, is to lower the cost of labor, which in fact impacts us all and lowers the ability of people to in the middle class as it is. And that brings back to me the idea of what happened, which was a real factor. It's been the same thing all the way. It's been the export of our industry,
sure,
the lack of our ability to be an independent economy by ourselves. And, I have to look at the I can't do this on a party politic perspective.
Okay. Well, I do appreciate your perspective, Jack.
All right.
And I certainly hope you call back in sometime soon. That, you made some great points, man. Appreciate you calling in.
You bet.
All right.
Bye.
Have a great night. You can get on the program if you're interested by dialing 1-877-443-2366. We do have also Lystra on line 2. Lystra, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm kind of tired, Zappa, but I've lost the stream.
You've lost the stream?
Yeah, so I couldn't hear the last of what Jack said because I wasn't listening on the phone, so I don't know if I want to talk now when the stream is down.
Hey, guys, I hate to interrupt, and I generally don't. What's going on is we've got a lightning storm blowing through here, and as a consequence of that, the stream blinked out, but it is back up.
Oh, the stream's back up?
Yeah. Sorry, sorry, Bruce. Hate to interrupt.
That's okay.
Well,
okay.
I think that it's been couched by the people in Washington as it's the corporations against racism. I think that's kind of beside the point. I mean, illegal means illegal. It's against the law. And we have laws in this country against people coming in here. They're not supposed to be here. Now, I'm for immigration. My ancestors came here like over 100 years ago and so on. But people getting in line and doing it legally, not illegally. And then people say, well, how can you ship back, 12 million people? Well, you just say, you're out of here, you're gone. I mean, I think that they are harming workers in our country. I think it's time to circle the wagons and take care of our own. Immigration now is not like it was over 100 years ago. This is, in modern times, things have changed. Did you read the article by Paul Krugman in the New York Times, March 27th, when he talked about immigration?
I did not. Tell me about it.
Well, I want to quote a couple of things that he said here. Illegal, and I'm not going to call them immigrants because they're not immigrants. They're, again, they're distorting the language. They're not immigrants. They're illegal workers. They increased the supply of less skilled labor, driving down the wages of the worst paid Americans. The most authoritative recent study of this effect by George Borjas and Lawrence Katz of Harvard, that's Katz, K-A-T-Z, of Harvard, estimates that U.S. high school dropouts would earn as much as 8% more if it weren't for Mexican immigration. I believe that. I think that's true. And it isn't that Americans won't take jobs, you know, certain jobs, just because the jobs pay so little that, you know, we'd be foolish to be working for, you know, such a low wage. Let me see what else we got here. It's clear that, you know, Mr. Bush's plan for a guest worker program is clearly designed by and for corporate interests who love to have low wage workforce that couldn't vote. Not only is it deeply un-American, it does nothing to reduce the adverse effect of immigration on wages. Plus, you know, these folks are bringing in diseases, you know, drug-resistant TB and leprosy. Our social safety net, like, has a whole bunch of holes in it already. And if they do end up paying taxes somehow, they don't pay enough to offset the services that they receive. And they can get services easier than Americans who already live here, who don't have insurance. It is my understanding, and I've heard that on various radio programs, people have said, yeah, I went to the hospital, like I had to wait in line for like 30 immigrants to go ahead of me. You know, and I went to the nurse and I said, why is that? And they said, well, you know, they get to go first. I don't know what all that's about. If you can imagine, you know, 11, 12 million Americans going down to Mexico and working and then demonstrating in the streets, I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, you know, I mean, that's Mexico. We don't have any business being down there. This is the United States. They don't have any business being here. Spencer in Canada and Fox in Mexico.
I think we had a bit of a break there. This is Bruce Birch, and we're having some technical difficulties. Just wanted to give you a heads up on that if you are listening to the program. Tell you what, let's see. Okay. Just trying to make sure if I was on the air. all right. Well, we've been talking about the immigration situation, and we've had a number of wonderful telephone calls from all across the spectrum. And I want to thank you all for calling in and bringing us to this, you know, to your understanding of what's going on here. And you know, I'm going to tell you this, and this is that. I mean, there are definitely racists on this that are in the mix on this issue. There are those that believe that the best way for America to succeed is to, you know, is to round up the undocumented workers and send them back to Mexico or whatever country. You know, I was going to say also, just as an aside, the Minuteman Project, I think, is, you know, in my opinion, is purely racist. There are those in the Congress that are racists. Tom Tancredo, James Sensenbrenner, thank you, Bob, for that. There are a number of people in this issue because, okay, I mean, that doesn't mean that everyone who is against undocumented workers is about hate, okay? And you know, I don't want anybody to go away from this program thinking that all of a sudden I'm saying that all of you who are against them coming here are about hate. I don't think that. I think we have a lot of varying opinions on this subject, and it's a very hot-button topic. And, you know, and the other part of this, too, is I can't help but think, why is it that we have this topic come out at this time? Why do we have this topic coming out at this time? Is it just because they started the Latinos started marching first in Chicago and then around the country? Well, why did they start marching in Chicago in March when the bill was passed in the House of Representatives in the middle of December and nobody noticed? You know, to me, it bears looking at. You know, it bears looking at. Was this whole thing designed to try to take the attention away from something else? I don't know. I'm just posing a question. You know, Jack called in and gave us a wonderful analyzation there of or analysis, I should say, not analyzation. That's crazy. Analysis of you know the larger forces that are at play. You know, I really do think that it's much, much larger than just, you know, being a nationalist about it or being, you know, strictly liberal in that, you know, it's just, you know, we have to look at them as human beings, which I think I'm on that side of the fence myself, but that's just me. But that's, you know, again, I can't help but think that it may be one of those things that is designed to take our minds off of other things. So if you want to get in on the program, you're more than welcome to. You can call 1-877-443-2366. Lord willing and fingers and toes crossed, we'll make it through the end of the program without the lightning taking us out. The stream has been reset a couple of times as a result of the weather in our home offices in the wild, wonderful, wacky mountains of West Virginia, where the studios of the Head On Radio Network are located. So, you know, stick with us. If all of a sudden you get kicked off the stream, just, you know, go back in, wait a couple minutes and try to reconnect and, you know, come back on the radio program. Okay. Now, I want to step away from the immigration argument for a moment. There's a number of other news stories that I wanted to cover tonight because I think they're important, not the least of which, I can cover this one really quick. I just wanted to sort of give you a heads up on some of the things that are going around the nation with progressive groups as well. The Food Not Bombs organization turned themselves in. They turned themselves into federal agents Friday at the Tucson FBI office in Tucson, Arizona. And let me just read you this. This was a press release that came out prior to Friday. I'm not exactly sure what exactly happened. I'll find out later. I'll call the guy who sent this to me. Free speech advocates and war protesters all across the United States will turn themselves into the FBI this Friday, March 31st. Through this action, participants will ease the workload of federal spies, freeing them up to engage in legitimate law enforcement activities that will keep our country safer. Participants will also save taxpayer money, thereby demonstrating their patriotism and the patriotism of war opponents. Through satire and humor, Food Not Bombs volunteers are calling attention to the serious issue of domestic spying by the Pentagon, NSA, and FBI. In particular, the group is highlighting the recently revealed FBI has included Food Not Bombs on its terrorist watch list. The FBI has been notified of this action and will have a duty agent on hand. The local office of the FBI indicated that Mr. McHenry is, in fact, under surveillance. Kevin McHenry is the co-founder of Food Not Bombs. And Food Not Bombs is an all-volunteer movement dedicated to nonviolence that shares vegetarian meals to the hungry in hundreds of cities all around the world. Here in Greensboro, North Carolina, the Food Not Bombs serves two meals a week to the homeless. They do wonderful work, wonderful work. But apparently, now, a group like Food Not Bombs, they're making food, folks. That's all they're doing. And they're under surveillance. But they've turned themselves in. God bless them. Oh, my goodness. All right. There's that story. Anyway, if you want to get in on the program, do so. We'd love to have you. 1-877-443-2366. Yeah, get in on the conversation here. We've been talking about undocumented immigration, undocumented workers. We've been talking about, we talked a little bit about censure and impeachment earlier on in the program. Whatever you want to talk about. It's your show, too. Give us a ring. This is All Things with Bruce Birch. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man's thinking man, and I'm sick and tired of watching corporate thugs steal our money, steal our freedoms, and use propaganda to turn us against each other. We live in a world that's turned against working people in every country, and I say enough is enough. It's time to take back the airwaves, time for us to stand up to corporate power and corporate greed, time to put aside all our differences and face our common enemies, and time to take back control of our government. So if you feel like I do, then I want you to join me for the premiere of the Cup of Joe radio show Saturday, April 8th, 2006, from 8 to 10 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. It's the wave of the future, the voice of the resistance, the truth that will set you free. So join me via streaming audio Saturday, April 8th, from 8 to 10 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. This past week, a crucial case came before the Supreme Court that gets right at the question of whether Bush must submit his actions in the war on terror to judicial review or whether he's free to do just about whatever he wants. This case concerns a law that Lindsey Graham championed at the end of last year, which strips the courts of any jurisdiction over military tribunals at Guantanamo. The administration's lawyer argued that enemy combatants at Guantanamo have no rights to U.S. courts, and that Graham's law anyway had inadvertently suspended their writ of habeas corpus. Now, the writ of habeas corpus is a fundamental right. It lets you challenge the legality of your detention before a judge. Under the Constitution, Congress can formally suspend it only in cases of rebellion or invasion. The administration's arguments didn't go over well with even moderate justices like Souter and Breyer, nor should they have. As Justice Breyer pointed out, the Bush administration is essentially claiming that the president can go to Toledo, put a military commission in place, choose a foreigner, and then judge him. Somehow, that doesn't sound like our system of government. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
All right, you're back on All Things with Bruce Birch. I'd like to welcome you back to the program. If you'd like to get on to the radio program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366. And it's my understanding that we have a caller on the line, my good friend CB from California. CB, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, Bruce, I'm doing okay. Actually, I'm doing better.
Well, that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. I've been sick for entirely too long. I'm tired of it.
I hear you.
Yeah. So
what's on your mind?
This immigration thing. I've been listening carefully to all your calls, and the woman who called in a little while ago, missed her name. She was pretty much telling it like it is. if countries don't maintain their countryness, and their own citizenship, they're within our already fixed approach to things. There isn't any way to maintain a healthy middle class. There just isn't. People are going to keep coming here and undercutting the American worker because they're hungry. They can't stop. And organizing them will not work. it might work a little bit in some places for some time, but as we all know, that once we're on an equal footing, the brown people are going to lose their jobs. and the whole cycle starts over again. You know, we're exporting jobs, we're importing people who will do them for less. We have to start thinking about a way for people of all nations, all nationalities, all statuses to survive. It seems to me that maybe the dreaded Jack Abramoff types need to go in there and represent workers.
That would be a switch, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that sure would be a switch. But you know, I just keep trying to think of how this can be resolved amicably for everybody, and there just isn't any way but striking out in an entirely new direction. Because it really is true, the American worker is getting strangled by the influx of cheap labor. There's just no two ways about it. I know a bunch of people who are jobless and couch surfing because their jobs have been taken away by people who will work for less, illegally less.
Well, you know, what? Okay. I keep hearing that, but what I also think is a very real idea, and you know, and I know maybe you don't agree with me on this, that's fine, is that, you know, those folks can be organized, you know, and
those folks
being the undocumented workers,
yeah,
can be organized,
yeah,
you know, and they can, and I think they, as a matter of fact, I think they have better organizational skills than perhaps a lot of the anti-war left does, but. you know, given the evidence of the marches that have happened over the last couple of weeks.
I totally agree.
You know, and I do think, you know, that there is a very real and a very, I'm just going to say very real prospect that by organizing and creating a national living wage or a national or even an international living wage, you know, but see, the problem with it, with any kind of work forward with those folks is that we would be running against the corporatist right, and you know they're going to work tooth and nail to keep us from organizing these people. Where in
fact, they're kind of pre-organized, Bruce. They're all of. And I would be, too, were I in their position. You know, I don't like this us and themness about this, but there isn't really another way to talk about it. Hunger, need, starvation pretty much makes you single-minded, you know, and everybody in that position is headed for the same thing. And when push comes to shove, they will always settle for whatever they can get, you know, and so the more opposition from the employers, the people who are the hungriest are going to cave. And, you know, so we're either faced with a big conflagration of American workers organizing and rioting in the streets to make this stop, or we try somehow to put a lid on it for now and work to get the current administration out right away and start putting people in there who are going to be working for the betterment of all of us and for the whole planet. We got to start thinking about the whole planet. Global warming. You know, this argument is a lead weight around our ankle while we need to be moving forward and thrown in there on purpose, I'm sure. But you know what I'm saying here, I guess.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. And I guess I'm going to hold fast to the argument that I really believe that we can create a new reality. And I think we can go off into a different direction that we haven't been going in also. But I think that we have to, you know, if we're going to start anywhere with trying to create, to get the middle class back, is you know, I mean, it's documented and evident that I'm gonna call it like it is, okay, CB, and I hate, and this is not directly at you, okay, it's
yeah.
not, but I'm gonna call it like I see it, and that is that I really do believe that the labor unions in this country, the larger bureaucratic labor unions, have lost their way, and they've forgotten that it's about organizing the little guy. It's not about organizing, you know, and putting people, you know, trying to get the largest businesses. It's about organizing the little guy and having associations so that all the little guys who are working for all the little small contractors can affect an entire area. You know what I'm saying? And they can affect an entire trade. And they can bring those wages back up, and they could do it pretty quickly, actually. I mean, it could even happen within a few months as opposed to, you know, 15 years, which if we round everyone up and take them back to where, or send them back to wherever they came from, it may take that long for the trickle up effect or trickle down effect to bring the national wage level back up to where people think it needs to be. So, I mean, I guess on the one hand, I think, I guess that there's an argument for organizing. I know
well,
that.
I think there might be a reason why that organizing has been sort of given up on, and it's the same one that I just mentioned about the starvation factor always undercutting that movement. That, you know, you start to get organized and stand firm to get better wages, and somebody else who's really hungry comes in and takes the job. And that's been going on for a while. So that could be why the labor unions have given up on that. I mean, I don't know
this
for sure.
It could
be.
Yeah. It could be. I think it also could be that, you know, people, especially, you know, I'm in the Southeast. People in the Southeast, for instance, voted in right-to-work laws.
Yeah, I know that. Ugh.
You know, talk about voting against your own best interest.
Absolutely.
You know.
I wonder if those were real votes or black box votes.
You know, it's a good question.
Yeah.
But you know, I do definitely appreciate your point of view, and I think there's something, you know, I think the answer here lies somewhere in the middle. You know, I think there may be a way to be able to do this and be able to address people's concerns at the same time. But it's going to take some work for us to find it. You know, it's there isn't an easy solution to this, I don't think.
Well, you know? I'm hoping that we can get some of those marchers marching to get rid of the administration, because I think that's the single best thing they could do for themselves and for the world. We all could do.
I totally agree with you. And you know what? Based on a lot of the information that I've gotten from people who were around the country in some of these marches,
yeah,
that they were very much anti-administration. So you may see an invigorated, anti-Bush movement through this process. I wouldn't doubt it at all to see that happen.
Well, let's just hope.
Well, let's hope so. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for calling, CB.
Hey, good night, Bruce.
Have a great evening.
All righty, bye.
Bye now. All right, that was CB from California. She also sort of echoed what Lystra was saying to a certain degree. We also have Marty on line 2. Marty, where are you from?
Oh, I'm from Northern California, like CB.
Oh, okay, great, man. Well, glad to have you on the program. What's your thoughts tonight?
Well, my thought is, I mean, we keep talking about the unions wanting to, you know, the unions feeling that they could possibly organize the undocumented guest workers, and I think it's highly unrealistic to think that they would actually be permitted to organize and affiliate with a union, because I see this as just something as a way of continuing to this race to the bottom that, well, Tom Hartman likes to talk about a lot.
Sure.
It was something I had spoken to last year. I was part of a two-day strike against the University of California.
Okay.
And I was telling one reporter for, I think, I forget what the magazine was, but it just seemed to me that this is all meant to pit every worker in the United States against every other worker in the United States, and then, dare I say, expound it globally. It's literally the workers of the United States versus everybody else on the planet. I mean, does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. It does make sense. I do agree with that. I guess I want to also reiterate sort of what I was saying. You know, in an ideal world, I would really think I would love to see the labor unions. You know, whether these folks can organize or not. You know, I mean, look at what happened in the early days of organizing. You know, labor in the 1900s. Man, there were people who lost their lives over it. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know that. I mean, I don't know that that's so much of an obstacle. I wonder, because we have become somewhat comfortable, how many people would actually go out and fight for the right to unionize?
I don't think too many people would right now. I mean, I think part of it is unions have been given such a very, very bad reputation. Some of it deserved. I know the union I'm part of. We have a great deal of pointless internal bickering that I won't get into, but it's very upsetting to me that we're fighting amongst ourselves outside of taking on this monstrosity of an institution that, again, the University of California that I happen to work for.
Well, you know, and I also, you know, I guess what I'm looking for is some sort of solution. Now, you know what? It may never happen.
No, the only solution is, I mean, and tell me if you agree.
Okay.
If that, you know, we have the World Bank and the IMF, basically when a country goes in and they get loans from them, they are basically opening up their country, their industries, and their populations to be exploited by the global, by various global corporations.
Sure.
And as they are being bought up, you know, they continue this race to the bottom. So I think the way to pull out of it would be to separate these particular corporations, each native corporation, for example, in whatever the native corporations of Mexico are, or in Canada, or in South America, like I think Chavez is trying to do, which is part of the reason why he's on our hit list, or on the administration hit list, I should say.
Yeah, the way they're talking about him.
yeah, thank you, Pat Robertson. Is, you know, if you can get them separated again on their own and under financing from their own countries, you know, get them to hire their people back. I mean, this sounds isolationist, but we may have to be isolationist for a long time before we can allow the kind of global corporate mixing that we have had over the past 20 some odd years since Reagan, I guess would be the best way to say it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I totally agree. I mean, I really do think that part of the issue, maybe the root cause of this issue is that, you know, we have had since, it was mentioned earlier, since Reagan's time, that the corporatist agenda has really been what's driven United States, well, domestic and foreign policy.
I would dare say it's before Reagan, but go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Well, and you're probably right. And because of that, you know, there are any number of regulations and bureaucracies created within the government and created outside of the government, such as the World Bank and the IMF, wherein the policy is to exploit. I mean, that's just the bottom line. The rules are made to exploit. And so the root, you know, in my view, the root, you know, part of the answer here, I mean, and I don't know if this will ever happen. God knows, in a perfect world it might, but you know, one can only hope and pray that at some point we have someone who is progressive enough in power to roll back some of these things. But I don't know that that's going to happen until there comes a time that the people are so upset, you know, and have been screwed so hard that they react in a violent manner.
Are you speaking in this country, or are you speaking of in other countries such as Venezuela?
Well,
In this country, I don't know if we'll do it or not. I mean, I like to think that we would, mm-hmm. but I think we're too dumbed down. We're too medicated. You know, Bob was talking about the Delphi going bankrupt.
Right.
And then you had mentioned with CB about people voting against their best interest, and you just want to know how many of those people who are about to either lose their jobs or get their benefits and or pay slashed are going to vote Republican.
Then you know what?
I mean, not one of them should, but you know there's going to be some people who are going to say, well, I'm going to embrace the poverty just so that gays can't marry or adopt or women can't have abortion. I mean, it's bizarre reasoning to think that the best thing for democracy is to take away the rights of other people. And I think I just got off track.
That's okay. You made some wonderful points, though. And I think that there is a much – and we discovered a few things tonight. And I think that we discovered that this issue is much, much, much larger than just, you know, undocumented workers in the United States.
It is not easy, because I think that for the most part, those of us on our side of this equation, the non-corporate and hopefully non-racist side, we want to be compassionate. We want to say, come on into the U.S., come and work. But then again, you have to raise this. But then again, with the jobs that have been sent out of the country, bringing more workers into the country, all that does is drive down the cost of labor, all this, while the cost of living in this country continues to rise. I mean, what's the cost of gasoline where you are?
It's $2.48 a gallon.
About $2.50 where I am, and that's at a nearby gas station. So as things, things keep going up, but wages keep going down, and you just can't have that. And until that gets straightened out, I don't see any hope for changing it.
Well, you know,
that really didn't make sense. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I think we have to start somewhere, and I do believe, I mean, that focusing and putting some energy into the unions and really trying to do some local organizing would be a wonderful way to start. I do need to let you go, though, because I got to get some closing program stuff done before the end of the program. I'm really glad you called, Marty.
No worries, my friend. No worries.
And, give us another call sometime. We'll be on again next week. All right. That was Marty from Northern California. And actually, I want to try to end this on an up note, and that is that the reality is in our society that we have built a nation that was pretty much, built to try to create a new society that would be equitable to all concerned. And in the middle of this process, we have folks who are coming in because they're lured by the prospect of the American dream, perhaps, or they're lured by the prospect of, wanting to, create a new life for their family, or they want to have the kind of style of living, that's one step above where they are. And, as a person who is a self-admitted progressive, I really think that we need to give them every opportunity to be able to do that. Now, how do we do that? That's up for debate. We didn't come to any set answers tonight on this topic. How do we do that? That's up for debate. I want you to think about it. Send me an email this week. Drop me a line. Let me know what you think about this topic, and I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can do that at allthingsreconsidered.org. And we're getting ready to close out this show for this week, and I wanted to thank all of you who called in, and I want to thank my friend Bob Kincaid and Agnes Kincaid there at the studios of the Head On Radio Network for keeping the ship flying straight and true, and even if there's a hitch or two, we still keep moving. I'd also like to thank Ben Birch, the White Rose Society, for archiving my radio program and for streaming the content of the Head On Radio Network. And, you know, I'd also like to thank all you folks who listen day in and day out, week after week. You know, you've done a wonderful service just by coming along and joining me for this ride. This show's been brought to you under the auspices of the West Virginia Council, District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream, and they're doing it by being a union. Thanks for joining me. This has been Bruce Birch. We'll see you next week.
After the revolution, from Groton to Tacoma, on many a factory floor, the workers talked of solidarity and refused to build weapons of war. No more will we make missiles. We're gonna do something different. For the first time, their children were proud of their parents. And somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. After the revolution, prison doors swung open. Mothers hugged their sons. The Liberty Bell was ringing when the cops put down their guns. A million innocent people lit up in the springtime air. And Mumia and Leonard and Sarah Jane Olson took a walk in Tompkins Square. And they talked about what they do now after the revolution. Debts were all forgiven in all the neo-colonies. Soldiers left their bases, went back to their families. A non-aggression treaty was signed with every sovereign state. All the terrorist groups disbanded with no empire left to hate. And they all started planting olive trees after the revolution. George Bush and Henry Kissinger were sent off to the world court. Their plans for global domination were preemptively cut short. Their weapons of mass destruction were inspected and destroyed. Battleships dismantled, never again to be deployed. And the world breathed a sigh of relief after the revolution. Solar panels were on the rooftops, trains upon the tracks. Organic food was in the markets, no GMOs upon the racks. And all the billionaires had to learn